today we're talking about the immune system. And if there ever were anything that you needed to thank the Lord for, it is the immune system. With it, you keep an even keel on your emotions. With it, you have efficiency of your brain. With it, you resist infections. And with it, you heal from injuries and infections and this kind of thing. We cannot overemphasize the beauty of the immune system. I cannot understand. It is beyond me to believe that anyone could think that such an intricate design as the immune system could have evolved. No possible way. No possible way it could have happened. It had to have a master designer. And another thing that I cannot understand is how I could ever have subscribed to the theory of evolution. It is truly science fiction. And I was never a great one for fiction, but I certainly swallowed that one hook, line, and sinker. But I'm so thankful to know that we have a great Creator. I remember shortly after I recognized that we had a great Creator, I was telling one of my friends, a physician, about it. And I thought he would be as delighted as I and would accept my discovery when I opened it up, that he would just accept it just as I had. And he didn't. He was a very religious person. And he said, "Oh, it makes God too small." And then I began to talk some more about God. And he began to ask some questions about my beliefs and my discoveries. And as I talked, he began to say, "Do you believe that any intelligent being could have done all that?" And I said, "Now whose God is small?" To design and construct an immune system is one of the most enormous feats. We cannot even imagine that it could be done, much less that anyone could design it. Nor can we even imagine that the one who is so exalted as to be able to design an immune system would condescend to talk with anyone from this atom of an earth here in this part, this remote part, this minuscule part of the solar system, of the universe. But he calls us his children, and he invites us to speak with him at any time. I'm thankful for that. I'm grateful. This morning, we had a mention made of television and its programming and its ill effects. And I would like to say something concerning television and its influence on the immune system. You may not have recognized that it has an ill effect on the immune system. Now, I just want you to take my word for it. It does have an ill effect on the immune system. Not only the programming, but also the technique of television is deleterious to the immune system. Even the flicker of the lights and our merge mechanism that we have in the brain to merge these little dots that are made into one picture. All of this is a bit of a strain on the mechanisms of the immune system when it is done repeatedly. So, just take my word for it that it is not good for you. But because there may be some who have the kind of bent of mind who would not just take my word, I want to cite you a new reference, just rather hot off the press. Okay. This comes from Medical Tribune News Service in 1995. And I'm going to quote, "Watching violent movies and television shows can overwork your heart and suppress your immune system, potentially boosting your risk of heart disease and other illnesses," according to two studies done by Duke University. In one study, 40 people who watched violent television scenes while hooked to heart monitors, viewers had higher blood pressure and heart rates after watching physically violent acts against a victim of their same gender. Verbal abuse and watching physical violence against a victim of the opposite gender had less effect. That's also a rather damaging statement, isn't it? I am sorry about that. I would like to have as much sympathy and compassion for someone who was not of my gender as one of my gender. I would like to be able to identify with a member of the human race, or even an animal. Even an animal should bring forth from us compassion that would raise our blood pressure and heighten the pulse and weaken the immune system. We should not tolerate violence, nor cruelty, nor injustice of any kind toward anyone or any living being. And the second study showed a similar thing, and I won't take more time for it now, but I thought that was interesting for you. Those of you who would like to have a book on this subject can read a book called 4 Reasons for the Elimination of Television or of TV, written by a man named Jerry Mander.
Jerry Mander?
That's his name. I believe it is in New Lifestyle Books. If it is not there, he can get it for you. 4 Reasons for the Elimination of TV. This man had been in the news media in some way, and he was working with it, and he became convinced that it was wrong. It had ill effects on the human body and the human mind. And so he wrote his book, and he was invited by a number of TV talk show hosts to come to their program and publicize his book on their program. And he refused. He said no. If it never sold a copy, he would not use that medium for publicizing his book. I respected him for that. I thought he was doing us all a favor. And yet, I recognize that that medium, when it is used correctly, can be a great blessing. It can give us information that can be a great blessing to us. But as it is generally used, that's almost 100% of it, it is deleterious in one way or other. Would you take the handouts that you have called The Immune System, How to Strengthen It? And we'll start there with the immune system. You may, if you would like, read the first paragraph. It tells about the June 1987 issue. It was my feeling that it was 86. That might be a typographical error. I'm not sure on that. My recollection is 86, but it could be 87. National Geographic, and it has some of the most beautiful slides, most beautiful pictures, color pictures of electron microscope pictures of parts of the immune system. Now, you will notice here that we have several things that that fall under treatments. You may read those first two. Let's go on to the ideal diet. The diet should be totally vegetarian, leaving off all fats, refined sugars, chemical additives, spices, that's as contrasted with herbs, and vinegar, majoring on raw foods and fresh juices, especially carrots and beets. Now, immediately, somebody is going to say to me, Dr. Thrash, do you mean that we should eat nothing but carrots and beets and them raw? No. Bear in mind what our objective is in this class. It is to devise a means of strengthening the immune system. It is a therapeutic diet. This is not a maintenance diet. It is a diet to be used until the immune system is strengthened, at which time you really must go back to a diet more liberal than this. At first, because most of us have nutrient reserves that are in excess of our needs, it will be best for us to take a few days, no more than a couple of weeks, in an all-raw, all-juice diet, as a general rule. Then, the next thing, take 2 to 3 meals per day. 2 are best, and never snack. I was really happy for the testimony of Pastor O'Phil this morning that he had stopped eating between meals when he was 12 years old. You may be considerably over 12, and you may be eating between meals, and if you are, take an example from this 12-year-old and stop eating between meals. It is not physiologic. Now, I understand that there is a bit of a controversy going on at present time over which is the best type of meal plan in order to lose weight. But we have more things going on in the body than losing weight. Amen. We have strengthened, keeping the immune system strengthened, and we have the maintenance of bones and the maintenance of muscle control and nerve transmission and a lot of other things going on, the keeping of the pH of the blood and the cells. All this is also going on at the same time. And therefore, I want you to take my word for it that 2 meals are better than 3 for almost all people. Now, there are some people who eat like a tiny bird, and if they don't eat 3 times a day, they will be deficient. I'm not addressing you in particular, but for most people, 2 meals are better than 3. Take my word for that. But now there may be some who would not want to take my word for that. And if you are of that bent of mind, some research that came out of Australia just last fall or early last winter showed that for people who take their meals on a 2-meal plan and their day, so far as their meals are concerned, looks like this. Let's say this is 24 hours. That would mean that this section is 12 hours. Those who eat all they're going to eat during a 6-hour period, at the beginning or close to it, and at the end and or close to it, and fast the rest of the 18 hours, they are less likely to get asthma, allergies, cancer, heart disease, and arthritis. What a blessing it is not to get any one of those, isn't it? And so I say that a 2-meal plan is for most people that is to be advised. So do by all means, if you're on an immune system strengthening program, take 2 meals a day. Unless your nutrient reserves are really quite low. Now there are some people who have been on a starvation plan. They need nutrients. But for most of us, that is not the case. Then B, under diet, have a set time for meals, being regular with your meals. Now again, when we have regularity in meal times, here is what happens to our cells. Let us say that this represents a cell in the digestive tract. These cells are, we'll just represent them here by squares, looking like this. And inside these cells, those cells in the digestive tract that are going to produce digestive ferments that will digest our food. When it is 1 hour before your meal, these glands begin to say, well, let's see, I guess I'd better wake up from my nap and start producing. And so they begin producing. And you will see, if you examine these, that there are some stored chemicals, stored digestive ferments beginning. Then let's put this at 30 minutes. We will see a lot more of these digestive ferments in the cells. And right on the time, at 0 hour, we will see them all over. The cells are filled with them, and even they're spilling out some on the outside into the ducts already, getting prepared for the meal that is to come. Now let us say that you decide, well, I want to work at my computer for another 2 hours. And so you do. And so after a bit, the cells, the salivary glands, the glands in the rest of the digestive tract say, well, I guess we're fasting today. And so we can put these chemicals back up on the shelf. And so we regress. After about half an hour, we start going backward. In about half an hour, we'll start going here, so that within an hour, we're back to here, and an hour and a half, we're back to there. And then you decide, well, I'm hungry now. I'm going to go and eat. And so at that point, your digestive apparatus has to go through this expensive, energy-consuming process that it went through before of putting things out. It also had to go through an energy-consuming process of putting things back. And so it has lost all of that. And then it had to do it again. And so you've lost some energy. Now, for many of us, we have enough energy that we don't notice it. And a year goes by, we didn't notice it. We don't notice it. 10 years go by, we may not notice it much even in 10 years. 20 years, we're feeling, this is a small item, you understand. But nevertheless, it's a little energy consuming. And after 20 years, I don't feel as perky as I used to. I must be getting old. And we start downhill. There is no need for us to get senile. We will get old, but we do not have to deteriorate with age. Being elderly and being sick should not be synonymous. Being elderly and being out of energy should not be synonymous. We should be as energetic in old age and as happy in old age as we are in youth. And I hope that comes as good news. Many of us, it will indeed. Item C, read labels for irritants. Now, there are a number of known irritants. In the stomach, we have a number of foods that, a number of nutrients that are discharged from the stomach at a very slow rate. If we have a lot of salt, or if we've eaten food that is high in salt, the pylorus, which is a thickened muscle here with lots of little nerves coming into it from the brain that tell it when to contract and when to open. It opens in response to a nerve impulse, which comes to the nerve impulse arises because of the number of nutrients in the bloodstream. Again, if you had nothing else for which to thank your Creator for, this would be enough. Enough to consume your day with thanksgiving if you just knew this, the wonder of this mechanism, a feedback mechanism. So that when sodium goes into the bloodstream, the nerves sitting up there in the brain are watching the sodium come by, sees all these nutrients come by, and it says, ah, sodium is getting too high. Let's send a message down to the pylorus and tell it to close down. Don't let any more out, because we're going to get overloaded with salt here pretty soon. And so a message comes down just like that. The pylorus closes up and no more salt gets through into the duodenum, which is where it's going to be getting out into the bloodstream. This kind of mechanism is an important mechanism for us. And so we need to be sure that we keep that mechanism functioning nicely. We can do that by being certain that we don't use a lot of irritants. Irritants, harmful foods, and additives, and then we've got a list of them there. And for every one of these, we should have an hour to tell you why they're bad for you. But let me just, you will pardon me if I just touch on it just a little bit. Vinegar breaks your mucus barrier in the stomach and irritates the nerves throughout the body, so that breaking the mucus barrier makes you more likely to get a peptic ulcer or gastritis. That's inflammation of the stomach. Irritating your nerves means that you are less likely to be able to pray. You're less likely to be able to concentrate on something you're reading. You are less likely to be able to keep an even disposition when your child disobeys you. So there are many good reasons why you don't want to take vinegar. And I think it is no happenstance that in cultures where a lot of vinegar is used, as well as a lot of hot spices, which also irritate in the same way, that in these countries, in these cultures, they're rather noted for being hot-tempered and passionate. Monosodium glutamate, maybe you know why it shouldn't be taken. Baking soda and baking powder products. These products are more likely to dissolve your bones because of the phosphate in them. Half the baking powder sold in this country, approximately, is phosphate baking powder. Phosphate and calcium have a seesaw relationship with each other. As phosphate goes up, calcium goes down and goes out in the urine. And then when the body wants to make a new homeostasis, it just drops, because we have to have calcium in the blood at a certain level in order to do many, many things. And bones are only one, that's the storage place for calcium. But we cannot clot the blood, we cannot send nerve impulses, we cannot contract our muscles. A lot of things we cannot do without calcium. So we have to have a very steady stream of calcium all the time in the blood. So it just brings some out of your bones and reestablishes it in the bloodstream. That weakens your bones. Gives us osteoporosis and fractures. That's only half of the baking powder sold in this country. The other half is aluminate. Which would you rather have? Aluminum or the phosphate compounds that are used in baking powder? Well, of course, aluminum has not been exonerated in some kind of influence in nerve cells in Alzheimer's disease. The last word is not in on that one, but certainly until that is clarified, it would be prudent for us simply to say, I will avoid aluminum compounds as much as I can.
What about soda crackers?
Soda crackers, out. Then D is omit 1 to 3 meals weekly unless underweight. That would constitute a fast, do you see? And then F, eat slowly and chew well. Many good reasons for that. One is when you chew, there is a feedback mechanism that sends a message down to the stomach that says, protein is coming, get ready for it. Sugar is coming, get ready for it. And of course, the preparation for one is different than it is, than the preparation is for another. And so we have a nice little feedback mechanism. Are you thankful for that today? Gives me joy to tell you about what our Heavenly Father has made to keep you happy and healthy and functioning well. If you chew your food well, you are less likely to get a peptic ulcer or gastritis. Did you know that? People who do not chew well are more likely to get peptic ulcers. There are some other things involved with that, but let's go on. Cook grains and legumes thoroughly. Now, you have a handout called Long Cooking of Grains. Would you take that now? And let's study that for a moment. Seventh-day Adventists have been teaching this for over 100 years, but it wasn't until 1991 that a really good medical hypothesis was published in Medical Hypothesis on why long cooking of grains is good for us. And it simply has to do with this kind of thing. That here we are with a granule of starch. And let's say that the granule looks something like this. And it's a granule of starch in grains may look like an onion with various zones like this. And as we begin to cook it, we take off. We just peel off a few of these layers like this. So in 30 minutes, you might peel off one or two or three of these. And so they just keep on peeling off one after the other. And then we have something left that may be this size. Now, in comparison, a red blood cell might be about that size. So these are microscopic things that we're talking about. That is, if we stop cooking right here, we would have something this big. Now, if we continue to cook, we would eventually get so that we would have something that's this big, about like that. Very much larger than a red blood cell, but small enough that it can get in the bloodstream. This is too large to get in the bloodstream. And so it is more likely to be become an irritant in the intestinal tract for you. Whereas this one is more likely to get into the bloodstream and actually circulate around with your blood cells. And so here we have it. We have a red blood cell in a capillary. Some of our smallest blood vessels are so small that only one red blood cell will go through at a time. But here is this thing that's circulating that's that much bigger. And so it's out here like this. And so when we come to when this inadequately cooked starch granule circulating around in your bloodstream comes to a meshwork of capillaries so small it cannot get in, then it plugs up this one. And then you have no circulation in this area. And most likely it will be in a place, it will lodge in a place where there are several capillaries coming off a small arteriole at the same time. And so you'll have a whole area, not just one capillary, that has no blood supply. And this can cause scars. And the radiologists are now doing, they are able to do tests that are so sensitive that they can detect a lesion in the brain or elsewhere with some of the newer equipment that they can use now. A lesion no bigger than a comma on a page. And consequently, they can tell us if we have scars. And they have found that nobody past the age of 30 fails to have little scars throughout the brain. These are called lacunar scars. These scars are believed by some to be caused by inadequately cooked grains. Now, the inadequately cooked grains also go to your immune system. It's bad enough to think of there being in your brain, these little scars, but to be elsewhere, such as in the immune system, where we may also have meshworks of blood vessels, and an inadequately cooked starch granule could get up to that point and stop. And in this way, you see that we can deteriorate the body by our unwillingness to spend a little extra time making certain that grains are cooked nicely. In our home, to make rice, we simply put it in a slow cooker. And if we want it for breakfast, if we want rice for breakfast, we put it on the night before, water and rice, and maybe a little salt. And my husband bought us a little timer that plugs into the wall, into a wall receptacle. And we just plug the slow cooker into that. It's set to turn on at a certain time. And you will see a schedule on the back of this handout for how long you should cook the various grains that we use as a common as common grains. All right. Yes. Question is, if we cook it overnight in a crock pot, is that good? It isn't bad. We will lose a few more nutrients by excessively long cooking. But the interesting thing about cooking of grains is this, that let's say our nutrients are coming along like this in the uncooked grains. We're going to lose some nutrients with the cooking process. During the first 10 minutes, we have most of the losses of grains of nutrients from grains that we're going to have. And the rest of the time, rest of the cooking time, there is a gradual and slow fall off of all the nutrients we're going to have. But most of them are lost immediately, and longer cooking will not make you in much worse condition with these tender nutrients than you would be in otherwise. But there are some other nutrients and some other advantages that go up constantly. And so there are two ways to look at that. All right, let's continue. Item H. Yes.
Before we get too far from the previous one about the spices, I'm not sure if I understood the connection between why you said that the stomach would withhold. By taking in hot spices, does that force the body not to withhold some necessary things, or does that...
No, that has to do with stomach emptying, I think, is the thing that you're talking about. But spices irritate the stomach, which makes it so that it isn't as sensitive an organ as it was. Do you see? And we need to have the stomach to be a very sensitive organ. A lot of important and very intricate things are going on in the stomach that help us a lot. And to lose these functions, which we can do permanently, we can lose them permanently. And most of us have already lost one very important function that the stomach could do for us if we had not lost this pretty much in infancy. And that's an automatic shut off of the appetite. The stomach would have done that for us all through our lives if we had trained it properly and taken good care of it. Would tell us, you've eaten enough. Oh, that's the end. Then no more. But I've got this half plate full. That's all right. No more appetite. Finished. But most of us don't have this automatic cutoff anymore. We've lost it. And so we can eat and continue eating and continue eating and continue eating until we hurt. One more question and then we must go. Yes, Ulrika.
What kinds of nutrients do you lose in cooking?
You lose some of the tender ones, such as vitamin B1, thiamine. That's a tender one. You can lose that. Vitamin C is lost in cooking, and it goes down in this kind of way. Of course, in grains, you don't have many. Riboflavin is lost with cooking. Vitamin B12 is damaged by cooking. So there are many of our nutrients, our tender nutrients. That, you'll still have a lot. You just don't have as many. One more question and no more.
When you dextronize,
does that shorten the cooking time? Yes, but only about 10 minutes. 10 or 15 minutes. So you hardly, it adjusts the consistency of the grains and develops some flavors for you, but doesn't do too much with the cooking time. All right, let's go to the next one. H, that's enjoy gardening, but do not work to the point of exhaustion. And that's the same with any kind of exercise. Exercise is a most important function, has a most important function in boosting the strength of the immune system. Item I, omit liquid foods at meals except on rare occasions. And item J, use frozen fruit blended with a little fruit juice occasionally as an ice cream substitute on hot days. It will help your appetite if you do that. Item K, shop at health food stores and produce markets that keep fresh food because of a rapid turnover. Now, even more important than produce is our grains. Grains and legumes and nuts must be fresh when we eat them. Things like chips are almost always unhealthful foods. The reason for that is the deterioration of the fats in them. Now, those that are baked are, but even the baked ones become rancid as well. What I like to do, if I'm going to purchase anything like that, as for a picnic, or if I'm traveling and I'd rather go to the grocery store to eat than to a restaurant, and someone says, well, let's get some chips. It very rarely ever crosses my mind to get chips. But someone says, let's get chips. Well, I'll get some chips. Then, before I leave the premises of the store, I open it up. I like to do it right in front of the cashier. Open it up and smell of it. And if it smells rancid, I say, oh, honey, this smells rancid. Would you smell of it? And I offer it to her. And then I ask, may I have my money back? Because if you do not get your money back, you will be tempted to eat it, will you not? Because most of us are just scotch enough that we would eat it if we don't get the money back from it. A lot of health food stores have things stored. They store them on their shelves for years and years before they ever get to your shelf. And they are long since past being helpful. Canned goods. Sometimes people will keep things that are canned for years and years, even decades. Somebody was telling me just yesterday that a woman said to her, what about, I have some canned goods that are 20 years old. Is it helpful? I said, okay, if I eat those. Well, she already has the diagnosis of cancer. And it wouldn't be a surprise to me if it weren't found, if we had technology good enough to find out that her eating these ancient canned goods might have been one of the causes of the weakening of the immune system so that it could not say no. We've got to say no to cancer viruses. The immune system we're depending on the immune system for that. And so the food that we eat must be fresh. There should not be the faintest taint of spoilage about things that we eat. Then the next thing, item L, let 5 hours pass between the end of one meal and the beginning of the next. We've touched on that already. Never use soft drinks, coffee, teas, medicines, and chocolate if there is any way you can avoid it. You may use herb teas, however. Drink an 8-ounce glass of fresh carrot juice daily and sip it slowly at the beginning of a vegetable, not fruit meal. Grape juice, freshly done, is good before a fruit meal. Another thing that's very good is a celery puree. Okay, I'll take one question and then we must go on. Yes. Medicines? Vitamins? You may take, if you take a vitamin pill, you should take those at meal times for the most part. But medicines, if you can avoid a medicine, by all means do. You should no more consent to take a medicine than no more quickly or with any less forethought than you would have an operation. An operation on your brain. It is a major procedure to take a medicine. Now what about, you could take those from over the counter, couldn't you? Couldn't you? Just go down. Those are mild ones, aren't they? Those that you get over the counter? Oh no, they are as strong as those that we use with prescriptions. The only difference between one that's done over the counter and one that's done with a prescription, one difference, and that is, it is considered by law that those that are sold over the counter that the instructions on how to use it can be put on the bottle in an understandable way, and that it's all right for the person to self-administer it and expect that they would not have to have their regular checks. Not so with prescription drugs. They are no more powerful, that is, some of them, most of them are not, than those that are sold over the counter. It is just that to use them requires certain special techniques, and it is considered that doctors are able to do that better than lay people. I want to lay a burden on your heart concerning medicines. If you are thinking about having this major procedure, that is, taking a medicine, before you do so, make yourself knowledgeable about that medicine that you're taking. And it is often a fact that when someone comes into my office taking a medicine, I say, are you really sick, really badly sick with the disease that you're taking this medicine for? Oh, yes. Are you sick enough to take these risks? And I pull down my PDR and I just turn there to their medicine. And I read them the cautions, warnings, contraindications, prohibitions, side effects, and so forth. And when I'm reading down through those, in most instances, the person will say to me, ooh, my disease is nowhere near bad enough for me to accept those risks. Okay. Item O. Eat fresh carrots, grapes, cabbage, asparagus, Brussels sprouts, beets, broccoli, dark greens, kohlrabi, and cauliflower. I'll have more to say about that tomorrow. And I only have 6 more minutes. I have 6 hours more of material to present. What can I do? I hate to not take questions, but I think maybe in the interest of even making a stab at a few things, I'd better go on. Item P, I'll be here after the meeting is over, and I'll answer any questions that I can. Item P, eat raw fruit or make fresh juice, including fresh lemon and grape and carrot juice, but don't eat or drink the juice of both fruits and vegetables at the same meal. Keep your vegetables at one meal, your fruits at another. This has to do with the strength of the digestive tract. It takes a certain strength to digest fruit. It takes a different spectrum of strength to digest vegetables. If the intestinal tract has to do it both at one time, it's more taxing. Where does the extra energy come from? From the brain. That's right. And therefore, you cannot think so well. Oh, but you've got 40 billion brain cells or more, maybe up to 200 brain cells. 200 billion brain cells. They function pretty well, don't they? If you have even a billion that went to sleep.
Well, it depends on where that billion is located that went to sleep. If it's the billion that's going to help you make a decision on something very important, or if it's the billion that's going to help you keep your house cleaned up and straightened, or if it's the billion that's going to help you to say kind things to your husband or to your children, it's the wrong thing to use the energy from that billion just to digest your food when you could easily save that energy. All right, let's continue. Item Q. Frequently choose cooked grains or vegetables from the following list. These foods are selected because of their low phenylalanine and lysine content, both of which have somewhat of a suppressive influence on the immune system. That's not to say they're bad nutrients. They have other functions. But we have always a system of checks and balances. Some things we need to have a little weighted on this side and some a little weighted on that side. And because of restraints and stimulants, we function nicely in this context. Item R, use immature legumes such as field peas or green peas not more than twice a week as they are high in phenylalanine and lysine. Item S, use only whole grains or quick breads without sugar, baking powder, or soda, or excessive salt. Now, let's go on to some teas, and I'm going to be talking with you about teas at a later time. So I won't cover this any more than just superficially right now, but would you notice that there are antimicrobial teas? Did you know that before now? That there were growing in nature some plants that would give you an antibacterial or an antiviral or an antifungal effect? There are. Our divine designer has provided for all our need, including defending ourselves against germs. Now, don't get me wrong. It was not our divine designer's intention that we would have to do battle with germs. That was not in his program. It was only after we broke law that we began to have to battle with the elements. Before that, God had made for us a perfect world. It was not a world that we had to go out and do battle with every day. We lived at peace in this world. We lived at peace with the weather. It didn't even rain. And yet the earth was watered. It had an underground irrigation system. So it was not God's plan that we should have to do battle with microorganisms. But in the plan that we chose, the plan of lawlessness, we have, as a result of that, we have now battles that we must fight. And the Lord has not left us powerless against these. He has given us those defense mechanisms that will help us there. Now, would you look at the suggested meal plan? A generous breakfast and a good dinner and a spare supper. And you should select one of these. Fruit or fruit sauce, bread, crackers or cereal, and herb teas. Now, if you are a heavy, heavy worker and you really and have very few nutrient reserves, you may want a small supper. But I encourage you to do what I have done. I have not eaten suppers for over 25 years. And if someone comes to my home and I think they are going to require a supper, it takes a special effort of my mind to even remember to serve supper. We just haven't served supper in our home. And often what I do is to say, make yourself at home. Here is the pantry. Here is the refrigerator. I will not be here at supper time, but please do help yourself. Here is a fruit bowl, and here is our fruit room. And just help yourself. Whatever is here, there's nothing reserved for some other meal. You take whatever you can find. I often encourage people to do that if they need a supper meal. But I don't usually serve supper. Now you will notice some other things that can be helpful to boost the immune system. Evening primrose oil, the use of excellent hygiene, that's where our 8 natural laws of health come in, the use of garlic. Garlic is a very good antimicrobial. It's antiviral, antifungal, and antibacterial. It is also anti-clotting if you need anti-clotting. If you need clotting, if you've been in an accident and you're bleeding, garlic will not interfere with your clotting mechanism. The Lord has provided something nice for us, hasn't He? Now, there are other things that will keep your blood from clotting inside your vein, giving you thrombi and emboli and the like. There are other things, such as no free fats. That's margarine, mayonnaise, fried foods, cooking fats, salad oils, and nut butters of all kinds. Leave those off if you've had a stroke or a heart attack or a thrombophlebitis, and you will not clot your blood inside your veins. Garlic is also useful in helping us to excrete heavy metals. We have very few things that will help us with that. But if a person has been intoxicated on lead or on mercury or on copper or some other heavy metal, to use garlic can help in the excretion of it. Then a little zinc supplementation, but only for a short time, for a few days, 3 weeks or so. Cold mitten friction, and you can find out how to do that. We may show you in our studies on hydrotherapy. If not, we have a book called Home Remedies that tells all about how to do it. The use of fever treatments. Again, we use the fever treatments to boost the immune system functioning. Cold mitten frictions are very good for boosting the immune system functioning. Alternating hot and cold daily showers. And then exercise. Now there are a number of suggestions for exercising here. And I think I will let you read about those. And read about water and sunshine and moderation.
On the hot and cold showers, is yes. That saying a hot shower in the morning or a cold shower at night or hot and then cold?
Ah, very good point. No, it is you get in the shower, it's nice and warm, and then you turn off the hot. Or turn it down. I'm not a great one to love a cold shower. There are a lot of people who do. Europeans somehow. I don't know. They take the cold showers. They are very Spartan. They're strong individuals. Got lots of courage. but soft Americans, most of us don't really like cold showers. Oh, I remember the first cold shower. Now, the first time I was ever offered a cold shower, I was at Wildwood Sanitarium and Hospital, which is very much like Uchi Pines. I was coming down with a sore throat. So they said, well, why don't you go over to the sanitarium and Lorraine over there will give you a nice treatment. So I went over there and she gave me a very hot fomentations from my chin down to my waist. And oh, it did feel good. I could just feel my throat healing. She put my feet in a hot foot bath. Then after it was over, she said, you know, as nurses sometimes do when they're treating doctors, they sort of ask if they, she said, I usually close off my treatment with a cold shower. Is that all right? And then a brisk rub down. Is that all right with you? And doctors are notoriously uncooperative with nurses. And so all of my professional life, I have determined that whatever a nurse suggested, if there were any possible way I could cooperate with it, I would. And so I said, well, yes, of course. If you want to do want me to have a cold shower, that's fine. I knew that when I got in that shower, I was not going to get in that cold stream. I was going to get over to the side somewhere. Or if it were equipped with hot water, that I'd put a little hot water in that cold stream. And so we went to the shower. Imagine my consternation when I saw that the controls were on the outside. But never you mind. I will still just back up under it and I'll put the nozzle over there on the other side. Until I got inside and the shower came at you from all four sides. My first cold shower. And I really hoped that she knew how to do resuscitation because I thought I'd get a heart attack. I think so. I think that was my last one as well. Well, may the Lord richly bless you. As you study more about the immune system, you have a handout called You Are a Miracle. This is for you a very special, it helps you to know how very special you are to the Lord. And I do not really need to tell you how very special you are to the Lord, because we know that our Heavenly Father sent His Son to die for us. That tells us how important we are to heaven.
You have been listening to another special American Cassette Ministries presentation. This recording has been digitally reprocessed from the original audio cassette in order to make this CD available. The audio quality was improved as much as possible. International copyright American Cassette Ministries, all rights reserved. To order CDs or audio cassettes of this or other presentations, or for a free catalog, please call toll-free 1-800-233-4450. International calls, please dial 717-652-7000. You may also order from our secure website at www.americancassette.org. There you will discover the largest selection of genuine Adventist preaching available. American Cassette Ministries is not a one-man band. It's an orchestra of outstanding speakers who are all on the same theological page. You can trust ACM. There's no compromise here. If American Cassette Ministries has been a blessing to you, why not take a moment just now and send us a note or an email with your testimony? Our email address is info@americancassette.org. We'll share it with the speakers and volunteer workers to encourage them. Your prayers and financial support are important to ensure the continuation of this ministry as we help prepare America and the world to meet Jesus Christ. He's coming soon.